rejection's not a bad thing. It can be a learning experience, right? It can be an opportunity to move on to the next thing quicker so you can actually close the next sale faster. You just got to learn that rejection is just part of business.
I'm Kristen Wisdorf.
And I'm Libby Gladys.
We're hosting the Tech Sales is for Hustlers special campus series.
There are almost 5,000 colleges and universities nationwide, and only about 200 have dedicated sales programs.
We are finding the leaders of those programs to get a behind-the-scenes look at how they're prepping the next generation of sales stars. Join us as we talk about their own career journeys, what advice they have for students considering a future in sales, and insights into what every student needs to know for a sales career. The Tech Sales is for Hustlers special campus series.
All right, welcome back, hustlers, to another episode of our campus mini series. Today, we have Richard Tate, who is the director for the Center of Professional Sales at JMU. I am Kristen Wisdorf.
And I'm Libby Gladys. Richard, we're so excited to be catching up with you today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. This sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to having a sales conversation with the two of you all.
Oh, yeah. So in the last few episodes, we've been picking the brains of sales leaders at a variety of different universities across the country. So many new programs are coming up, and it's just a movement. Professional sales is now becoming a more legitimate career path for students to consider. So we'll definitely talk more about that a little bit later. To start things off, though, we were hoping to get to know you a bit and share with the listeners a bit about your background. So I'm going to start off by asking you what we typically ask the students and the candidates that we interview, which is give us a 60-second snapshot about yourself, your own personal highlight reel. Who is Richard Tate and how did you become in the seat that you're in today?
Okay, fantastic, Libby. Thanks. My name is Richard Tate. I started out at University of Virginia many years ago. And I tell you all that because I played football there. And the first year I was there, James Madison beat us. So now I teach at James Madison. I think JMU has only played UVA once and JMU won. That's a little fun fact. I graduated. I joined the Navy. I was a pilot in the Navy for 20 years. So sales came late in my career. But after I retired from the Navy, I was very interested in aviation. Most of my friends were becoming airline pilots. It just wasn't what I wanted to do. I initially got hired by Boeing to work on airplane programs, all B2G, business to government, working on replacement airplane programs for some of the equipment that I had flown while I was in the Navy. So people ask, well, how did you get in sales? Why does Boeing just hire some psychology major from UVA that spent 20 years flying airplanes? And I'll tell you, it's because I was a subject matter expert in what I had done for the Navy. So the Boeing hired me in sales and marketing because of the relationships that I developed with senior military leaders and the expertise that I had operating the equipment that the Navy was operating. So Boeing saw some value in that, in me, to bring me onto the sales staff so I could continue to have the conversations with my Navy friends and work from a sales and marketing perspective on the Boeing side. I did that for 5 years. We were successful. The Navy purchased a 737 aircraft from Boeing to replace a plane that was getting old in the inventory. And after that program was over, I went down to Lockheed Martin in sales and marketing to sell systems that Lockheed Martin developed and built that would go on that airplane that the Boeing company had just sold the Navy. So Lockheed saw value in me by being on the team that had sold the Boeing aircraft to the government, to now work on the side of filling that plane with systems, sensors, and weapon systems. So I did that for about 5 years and then struck out with a couple friends of mine on an entrepreneurial pursuit, working government programs. All my professional sales was, for the most part, B2G. When we went the entrepreneurial route, we were working with some commercial companies. I was still writing proposals. I have a small place in Virginia. I used to always sit on the front porch because it's quiet, and I would write my proposals and look out over a beautiful view. And I was sitting there one day thinking, man, I've been doing these proposals for so long. I picked up the newspaper, and JMU had an advertisement in an actual physical newspaper where they were looking for a new director of Center for Professional Sales. So I was looking at the newspaper, and I was like, I wonder what the heck that is all about. And Dr. Andy Wood was the point of contact. So I think that day, I knew nothing about the program. I just picked up the phone. I called Andy Wood, and I said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I've done. I don't want to waste a lot of time applying to the job. Do you think you'd be interested? And he responded, yes, apply and let's see where it goes. So I applied and just a couple months later took the position as the director of Center for Professional Sales at JMU. That's probably longer than 60 seconds, but that's my sales pitch.
Wow. I love that you sold yourself into the role.
You have to do that. And I talked about value each time. I'll tell you that when I retired from the Navy as a Navy pilot, my ego was huge. It's taken some while to bring that down a little bit. But when I retired, I thought that, hey, all I got to do is knock on the door of the Boeings and the Lockheed Martins of the world, and they're going to open it for me. And I quickly learned that didn't happen. I knocked on the door, nobody answered. And I went through a whole cycle of crafting resumes, dozens, maybe 100. I went through interviews. My first interview, I'm like, this is exactly what I want. I'm going to get it. And I thought I did a great job, but they obviously thought I didn't. And it took a while. I mean, it takes a while. So for all those students that think they're going to walk right into exactly what they want, as a 44-year-old military officer, I thought it was going to be easy. And it wasn't, right? It was a challenge. And it took a few months, a lot of interviews, a lot of resume, different renditions of resumes. It took a lot to get that first job that I really wanted. But then once I was in, it was obviously a lot easier.
So that's very interesting. I mean, you had mentioned, so your first job was at Boeing and you were the subject matter expert, right? You were in the Navy. You understood what the area that you were playing in. It's often very different for students, right? Especially if they take sales classes, they maybe understand like baseline sales theory, ideas, techniques, but they might not, especially getting into tech sales, know anything about the technology. In a way, like you knew a lot of information. How did you learn the sales part of that job when you knew everything about the aircraft?
That's the interesting thing. I knew the technology well. I had no idea about sales and marketing, right? So they hired me because I had the relationships. I had the expertise, I had the established network, the established relationships. And that's what companies saw value in. That's what Boeing and Lockheed both saw value in. So I talked to my students a lot about, now I had a list of features, right? Pilot, Navy. I talk a lot to my students about features, but Boeing was not going to hire me for any of the features on my feature list, my personal feature list. I had to identify what my value was to them and be able to speak in terms of my value from that expertise and from my network that I could bring to the company. That was my real value to them. And so I had to be able to speak in terms of value, not just, you know, I got 4,000 flight hours. I did all these things. I mean, those are features. They have no value to someone like Boeing. And students, we always talk about, well, I'm the president of the fraternity, or I have a 3.5 GPA. Those are all features. And they want to talk to features. They want to tell me all their features. But I tell them, those don't mean anything to me. I mean, what is the value? I mean, with the fact that you tell me you had a 3.5 or a 3.8 GPA means nothing to me. But when you tell me you stayed up at night, you worked hard, you overcame some hurdles, you had to do some team effort, work as a team to complete assignments. Now, those kind of statements are expressing your value. But 3.5, 3.8, 4.0 means nothing to me. You had to do something to be able to do that. So I really try and stress the importance of being able to explain your value to a prospective employer or recruiter. And many students, particularly with the pandemic, are saying, well, I have seniors now that didn't have an opportunity last summer for an internship. But many of them have been servers, right, in service industries. They say that doesn't mean anything. Those are customer relations experiences. In those roles, you are solving problems and you're the direct face for your restaurant to a customer. The customers are going to come back to that restaurant based on the experience they have with you as a server. I use the Challenger Sale a lot in my classes, and that's a book that talks about the number one reason for repeat business is the sales experience. Customers come back to someone, to a company, not because of the product, not because of the four Ps, not because of the promotion, the price, the placement, all that great stuff we learn about as marketers. People come back to companies because of the experience they have working with them and that sales experience. And that's the direct role of a salesperson today, is to create that experience that gets people coming back.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You talked a little bit about, it's not necessarily about the features, it's about the value. And the way you portray that value is by telling those stories and walking perhaps a hiring manager through real life examples. And you have such an interesting story. You went to UVA and then went into the Navy. Did you know you always wanted to go into the military? Tell us a little bit about that part of your life and how that happened.
That's a really long story. I don't think we have time today, but no, I'd given it some thought early in my college time at UVA, but I graduated and I wasn't ready for the workforce. I really wasn't. So my story is pretty unique. I did an exchange program that the university had with the University of Auckland. And I went to New Zealand on a work exchange program after I graduated. And I went down there and I really didn't work that much, just enough to get by and backpack around the company. But where it took me was a bar in Christchurch, New Zealand, where I ran into U.S. Navy crew. And at the time, the U.S. Navy had a base in Christchurch, New Zealand, which is on the South Island, to do all the support flights out to Antarctica. And so I ran into a group of guys that were only a year or so older than me. I was just drifting around the South Island of New Zealand, working a little bit, skiing and backpacking. And I ran into these guys who were just a couple years older than me and became friends with them. And one night we were sitting in the pub, and this is before cell phones, and the individual's beeper went off. The guy who was just a couple years older than me, his beeper went off and said, "I got to go." And I said, "Okay, I'll stay and hold the place down, have fun while you guys are gone." And they left and came back about 2 days later. And what had happened was there was an emergency in Antarctica at McMurdo Station, and they had gotten the call. There was a cardiac event, and they had got the call to do a rescue flight from Christchurch, New Zealand to McMurdo Sound or McMurdo Station. And when the guys got back, I mean, now these guys were only a couple years older than me, and they had just flown a significant distance through bad weather to go pick somebody up on the ice and bring them back. And I'm thinking, and when they walked back in, it was just like, no big deal. And I saw so much purpose. What I saw was a lot of purpose. And that's why I talk about purpose in my class. I saw a couple guys, actually five, that were like 2 years older than me, that had just flown from Christchurch to Antarctica to rescue somebody, save their life and bring them back. And I saw a lot of purpose in their mannerism. And I was like, I want to be like that. I want to find that purpose. So I wrapped up my time in New Zealand, came back to Virginia, actually, was walking down the street in Richmond and ran into a Navy recruiter, and we started a conversation, and I was in the Navy about a month and a half later.
Wow. We've already said this a few times at this point. Your background is just so interesting, and it all kind of builds off of each other, eventually landing you in sales, which is just crazy. So you talked about purpose a little bit, and I think that's really interesting because most students that I speak with, they put themselves under a lot of pressure when they're deciding their first job after graduating. What is my purpose? What product am I going to sell? What industry am I interested in working in? And I think a lot of that stuff, especially in your first role, might not be as important. Do you think that students graduating have to know what their purpose is, or is that something that you navigate through life experience?
I think if you wake up each day with purpose, that you're going to do better than folks that wake up just drifting and without purpose. There are a number of great books out there. The author McLeod wrote Selling with Noble Purpose, where noble in that term is always in the service of others. Lisa McLeod is the author's name. She wrote that book first. I use it in my class. And she also wrote another book, Leading with Noble Purpose. And I use that in my leadership class. So in both of those books, they've done research where companies, and like Patagonia is one of them, that develops products that they don't want to end up in the ocean after one use. They want them to last a long time and repurpose and those sort of things. And that's their purpose. And Lisa in her books will tell you that companies that have a purpose in their products and services do better than companies that don't clearly articulate what the purpose of their products and services are or their company. And she'll also tell you that individuals that wake up each morning feeling purpose will do better getting through the day. But do you have to know that purpose? No. I had an example. I saw a real world example and I just said, I want that. And I went and got it. And then for 20 years as a pilot in the Navy, I felt a lot of purpose flying an airplane around with the American flag on the tail. I felt a lot of purpose in that. And then what happens in that community is physiology takes over and the eyesight and the hearing and things. So at even 44, I was too old to do what I'd been doing for the last 20 years. That's a shock, but you have to come to those terms. And then I felt a lot of purpose because what had happened while I was in the Navy is we never had everything we needed to do the job we needed to do. So when I retired from the Navy and got hired by Boeing, my purpose shifted from showing the flag around the world to now helping develop and produce products that our military members needed. And I felt a lot of purpose in that because if you all aren't nearly as old as me, but I mean, the country has been in conflict for probably your entire lives. I know Libby's, certainly hers. And Krista, I don't know anything about you. I'm not making any assumptions, but I felt a strong sense of purpose to put the things, the tools in the hands of the folks that were still out there in harm's way. And that's what I did at Boeing and Lockheed Martin. And then what happened to me is it just drug on and on the conflicts in the Middle East. And I just grew weary. I got tired of it. And I started to think that, hey, yeah, I'm building some great products and services with the two largest defense companies in the world, but I'm not really sure it's really making a difference. And so at that point, I got the JMU, I started looking at JMU, and my purpose now is to help my students transition from college seniors to careers that they can thrive in. And I feel a lot of purpose in that now. So what I just told you is I had at least three significant different purposes in my life, but my success has always fallen back on having that purpose, even though it's changed over time.
That's amazing. So taking a step back, you transitioned from the Navy into sales, like you said, a little bit later in your career. What do you think you learned in the Navy that applied to the sales role outside of just product knowledge? Is there anything that kind of transferred from those two very different sides of the coin?
Don't give up is like the number one thing, because I know you all see it. You recruit and hire college seniors. And I think many college students think they're going to do well in sales. And all salespeople experience adversity when they start. They don't have the network. They don't have the product knowledge. They're not seen as perhaps experts in the industry. And that all takes time. And I think what happens to many young sales professionals is they give up before they develop the skills they really need to be successful. You know, it's not going to happen in a couple months. I think in a lot of ways, we've become sort of an instant gratification society, right? If you see something on Amazon you want, Jeff Bezos will get it to you by the end of the day. So we expect all these things to happen really quickly. But I don't think career progression and development can happen at that same pace that Jeff Bezos can deliver your product to you. So I think what happens with young students is they have some idea of what they want to do and how they want to do it. And then they get out there and it's a little more difficult or challenging than they expect. And sales is particularly one of those careers where success just doesn't occur overnight, because you have to build that network. You have to build the skills. You have to learn how to communicate with individuals. And that just doesn't happen overnight. I tell my students it's going to take you a year at least, right, before you're going to be successful at sales. And maybe it's 18 months. I mean, I don't know. And I know Memory Blue has a model, right, to get folks successful, get them recognized and get them transitioned in a timeline. But I'm sure you all don't see overnight success in your new hires in the first month. And those individuals by month 12 or 15 or 18 are very effective. So I'd like to hear about what you all see. Is this true or not? I mean, that's my perspective.
Yeah, Richard, absolutely. I think especially people who get into sales, we hire all personalities and backgrounds and experiences, but generally we hire competitive people who are used to winning at the things that they're doing, whether it's school or sports, things like that. And I think the biggest surprise is they get into sales and they start losing, they start failing and maybe not winning all the time. And it's a surprise to them and it's challenging and it takes some time to get used to it and use those failures as motivators. Richard, what other misconceptions do you think either you had back when you were getting into sales or that you're seeing some of your students have now about sales before they actually jump into that first job out of college?
Well, I teach in a marketing department and my course is required, right? My professional selling course is required. The classroom I walk into at the beginning of the semester is 90% marketing students that want marketing jobs and 10% sales students that are actively thinking about sales. And when you look at national statistics, 85% of all marketing majors start out in sales. So I walk into a class where 85% of my class thinks they're going to be marketers. And 15% is going to be sales, but the national average is 85% are going to be in sales and only 15% are going to get those digital marketing jobs they're looking for. So we talk about that a lot. There's a big mismatch between expectations your senior year as a marketing major. I know you all hire many different majors. I'm just sharing my experience as a professor in a marketing department and what the real opportunities are. So that's the first step, a mismatch in perspective. An opportunity. So that's the first hurdle you have to overcome. And then a lot of people have a misconception about sales. I use spin selling. It's getting a bit dated, but I use that specifically because Boeing used it. And when I was in Boeing's government operations office in Washington, D.C., we shut the whole office down and went through spin selling. And so when I got hired by JMU, I'm like, well, that's a good start, because if it's good enough for Boeing, it's good enough for me and my class. So we started with that. That tells you how to ask the right kind of questions. And questions in a sales role are very important. And students don't realize that solution selling is getting a little bit maybe dated now. I mean, we've heard a lot of solution selling. That's what spin's all about. That's why I like challenger sales. I mean, students don't realize that to be effective in sales, you have to have the communication skills, the investigative skills, and then you need to be able to be an expert in whatever it is you're selling so you can actually teach somebody something about it. And that's where the whole challenger sale perspective comes in, being able to teach. So to me right now, selling in a very advanced technology world is the ability to teach somebody something. that they don't know, whether it's something technology-based about your product or service, or maybe about the market, or maybe about the competition. But sales roles now, and that's what the challenger sale is telling us, and I saw that my entire time. The value you bring in any conversation is when you bring new information. So you have to be able to bring that new information into a sales conversation to create value for yourself and your product.
Yeah, that's such a good point. Even going back to your comment about expectations, I was exactly that person. I was the marketing major who knew I was probably going to have to go into sales. I took my sales classes at my college, so I would be prepared for it. But aside from expectations and just talking about what these students are most likely going to experience in their first job, what else is the center doing and you doing to prepare students? I mean, you've been at JMU going on 5 years now. How else are you preparing students to get ready for that job, whether they're fully in the sales program in doing sales competitions, or maybe it's just their first required class with you?
Well, I think before I came to JMU, we had very limited corporate partner interaction and engagement. So the value that Libby brings to my program, she thinks she's just recruiting for you all, but she's doing a great job of that. But what she's really doing is showing my students what the industry's like, what a company's like, what a person looks like that's successful in the company. A walking, talking example of success, relatively recent graduate, and out there doing it. So she's showing people, she's showing my students, right, just in her presence. And now it's online. And frankly, that's been a little more difficult because voice comes through, image comes through, but personality doesn't really come through that well. And we're looking at peach bowl in 2 and 3 inch squares, and it just doesn't work that well. But what I've done and what many universities do, they bring folks like you all on campus to have those direct engagements with our students, not me answering the questions. I tell my students, I'm going to bring Libby on campus. Ask her the hard questions, right? Ask her anything you want. I mean, it's not coming from me because I'm an academic. And yeah, I got an interesting background. And what really does it today is bringing those young professionals on campus that have been successful to show them what it looks like. Best example is someone who's been there and done that, right?
Definitely. So how large is the JMU sales program now? How big are you guys?
We teach 4 classes. That's part of our sales program. We have a sales concentration. Students can get a concentration by taking any 3 of those 4 classes. All students have to take the professional selling course. Then we have an advanced professional selling course. We have a CRM course, and then we have a sales leadership course. So we have those 4 courses. You can get a concentration. At any given semester within those 4 courses, we have about 170 students enroll. In the basic sales class that all marketing majors have to take, I mean, that's certainly our largest class, typically running 4 or 5 sections with 120 marketing majors that may or may not be interested in sales. And then the other 3 classes typically have a course loading of about 20 to 25 students each semester.
It's just incredible how much you guys have grown even in just the last 3 or 4 years. I guess there are a lot of universities out there that don't have sales concentrations. They don't offer sales courses. What do you think is a valuable takeaway that students can get out of a sales class that they might not be able to get from other courses that they're taking?
I think it's just an awareness of what sales is. We still have this stigma attached to sales. And hats off to folks that are part of the University Sales Center Alliance. That's a national organization that has tried to recognize sales programs that are excelling, to create some levels of standards throughout all sales programs in the U.S. There's still a stigma attached, and we always use the used car salesman, right, to sales. But that's not really what sales is about at all today. I mean, sales, for the most part, is a very technology-based field. It doesn't matter what it is. I tell my students, even that simple double-walled drinking cup that you might have on your desk, I mean, do you know how it really works? If someone says, well, how does that really work? You got to be able to talk about vacuums, and you got to be able to talk about thermal transfer and the lack of atoms in between those 2 layers. So thermal transfer can occur. I mean, even something as simple as those double-walled drinking cups, if you really want to be a good salesperson, you better know how it works. And you're getting into vacuums and thermal transfer conversation if you're really going to be good at it.
The pain of finding and hiring strong sales professionals is a critical challenge that is widespread and getting worse. The Memory Blue Direct Hire Service specializes in filling sales development roles within the high-tech space. And with a 1-year performance guarantee and 0% interest financing, you can feel secure in your selection process when you use Memory Blue Direct Hire. As a company, we hire close to 300 SDRs annually across our 5 office locations. That's nearly an SDR per day all year long. Finding, hiring, and developing sales talent is the core strength of our business. Now we're letting the public tap into the resources of our world-class talent team, specifically trained to find high potential SDRs in order to close this gap. For more information on this service, check out memoryblue.com/direct.
I think that's a really great point. There's a lot of positives and negatives, a lot of misconceptions that are rolling around that you just have to counteract. And the only way we can do that is by educating, by spreading the word about the value in this foundation. But we can talk about the realities of it. I mean, it is extremely challenging. I'm going to ask you to finish this sentence. You probably shouldn't consider a career in sales if blank.
If you can't take rejection, right? It's probably a lot of people can't. That's a learned trait, I think, in our society today. I mean, you learn. I think most students, one of the biggest things I struggle with in my sales role plays is to get a student to actually close a sale and ask for the business. I hear statements all the time. You said you liked what I had to show you today. So if perhaps I had a contract with me, if by chance I had a contract with me, would you maybe be willing to sign it if I had that contract with me? I may be dramatizing it a little bit, but I've had examples similar to that. So it's that rejection, but it's something you practice and it's something you get better at. And you realize in a sales role that it's just part of day-to-day operations, right? People are going to say no, and maybe I can overcome an objection, perhaps. Maybe I can swing the conversation back in my direction. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you just got to say okay and move on. So you got to have that attitude that, number one, rejection's not a bad thing. It can be a learning experience, right? It can be an opportunity to move on to the next thing quicker so you can actually close the next sale faster. You just got to learn that rejection is just part of business.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I think a lot of students think, well, I can't handle rejection, so sales isn't for me. And it's not necessarily, I mean, some people innately are fueled by it, but I agree with you, Richard. It is something that it's like a muscle. You have to learn it and practice it over time. And it's more about, are you going to get energized to keep going, whether it's with that prospect or on to the next one? And I think sometimes students, they get nervous about facing that rejection just because it's something that they haven't experienced before, or they think, oh, that's not my personality. But a lot of sales skills, I believe, can be taught and can be practiced over time. And it sounds like that's something that you're doing with your program and the competitions that you're doing with your students, is you're giving them the opportunity to actually practice those things before they're out in the wild on their own doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of our role play. Unfortunately, all my recruiters want to be nice and hire all my students. When I ask them to have a very strong objection and say no, I have a little bit of trouble with my recruiters playing that really hard role. So we're doing some things. Not being critical here, Libby, you do a great job all the time. But seriously, that is a challenge, right? I mean, to get that into your training program, to make it a learning experience, it's hard. Even in a training role, people don't want to create that tension. They don't want to transition that conversation, even in a training mode, to a moment of tension that puts the other person on the spot. And that's really what a strong objection does in any sales call. We're working on that. Objection handling happens to be one of our key factors that we're working on at JMU in our sales program. It's one of the things we measure and we try and get year over year improvement on. So anyway, it converts to a different point, but that's what we do. I think it's important to overcome rejection. It's important to overcome difficult points in a conversation. And you have to include that in your sales training program because it happens every day. Otherwise, the only other option is if it gets hard and challenging, walk away. And a lot of folks, I think, would prefer to walk away than accept the challenge and articulate why they should still be in the room.
I think that that's a really important point, because in any entry-level sales gig, you have to retrain your brain to understand that failure is just part of the process. And trust that process. You're bound to make mistakes. The best salesperson in the world made that first cold call ever. It probably sounded pretty terrible, those first few conversations. I think trusting that process is really important too. With the change that you made working in the Navy to then going into sales, is there anything that you wish that you had been better prepared for with that transition? Or what do you think you wish you had been better prepared for moving into that role?
Oh, well, I had no business background. So I was a psychology major. I started out at UVA. I was actually going to go down the finance role. And like most of my marketing students that don't start in marketing, they started in something that didn't work out for them. And they did something else. I don't know, Kristen, did you start out in something besides marketing?
No, I actually knew that I was going to be a marketing major, but I was very self-aware. I knew accounting and finance were not for me.
I showed up at Boeing when I first got hired. One of the first meetings I went to, they were using the term KEGR, compound annual growth rate. And the senior manager kept talking about keggers. And all I was thinking about was, hey, I played football and I was in the Navy. great, we're going to have a kegger. I want to do this. So the language, it took the language. I went from a Navy perspective of language to the business world. And so I was lacking a lot of that knowledge just in common terms and things that we were doing. Even sales pitch to me, the first time I heard pitch, I mean, everybody in the meeting I was in, everybody was talking about pitches and sales pitch and pitch. And I'm like, I don't like that word. It doesn't resonate with me. But now, I mean, it's just common language, but it threw me off. Keggers and pitches.
So when students are considering that first role, it's a tough transition. You're moving from student life to having to go into the 9-to-5. It's a big decision. What do you think is the most important attribute of a company or opportunity that students should be considering when they're weighing out their options for that first role?
Well, where I see my biggest variation when I talk to students about and what they ought to be thinking about is it's an investment process, right? You're accepting a position with a company. You're investing your future with that company. I always ask my students, what is that company investing in you? What's the training program? What are they going to do to help you be successful? Because we already talk about sales is difficult. It's something you're going to have to do maybe for a year or longer before you're successful. Are you going to be struggling that year on your own? Or what's that program that the company has that's going to help you through that first year? What's the training program look like? What's the mentoring program look like? How are they going to help you through that difficult time? Because what you really want is a team effort through that difficult first year, I think, right? And some companies will hire you as a salesperson and just throw you out in the market and say, go do it. And some people thrive in that environment and many don't, right? I think students should be looking for a company that's willing to, if a student is going to invest their future year or two in a company, they should be looking at what the company is going to invest in them to help them be successful through that first year or two.
Agreed. It's tough having to consult them through all of that, but it's a big decision like we were talking about. So I think it's a really good point.
It can also be harder, more challenging this year, because if you're not able to go in and interview in an office because of what's going on, it might be hard to understand what is the training really, what is the culture like, what's the support system like? What are you noticing students are doing or companies are doing right now to interview and hire and make the right choices now with everything that's going on with the pandemic and working from home and even your classes being online?
Yeah. So fortunately, this semester, I'm face-to-face in both my classes. That has challenges too. You're behind masks. I struggle with remembering names to begin with. And then you throw a mask and all you see is eyes. And it's hard to pick up names. So everybody's transitioned to Zoom, right? Nobody, from a corporate perspective, nobody has a travel budget. I do have one company partner who has one recruiter who just survived COVID a couple months ago. And now she's good to go for a while, for at least 6 months, according to science. So her company is letting her visit college campuses. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. They're trying to engage back on campus, but doing it from that perspective where, okay, she's no longer at risk. But I think, I haven't really talked to Libby, but just about all our corporate partners are not budgeting anything for travel and everything's taking place virtually. The challenge for a company like Memory Blue or any company is nobody really knows what you do or how you do it. And I can go to your website and I get some basic information, but that doesn't really tell me how you do what you do. It just tells me what you do. That how process is where the interaction comes in. And from a video perspective, all our students are becoming much better at Zoom and the other tools that are out there. And my sales call role plays, all my students have to share their screen and do a presentation because I think that's important. That's an important skill to have. But I think from a recruiting perspective and a student perspective, it's just the way things are taking place now. And we're all getting better at it and becoming more efficient.
So we talked a little bit about the drawbacks of transitioning virtually. I think that a lot of universities have done a great job at still continuing to engage students and have them participate in class and things like that. Is there any positives that you're seeing or silver lining with things moving virtually? I know that you said a lot of your classes are in person right now, but do you feel that there's some skills that are essential they could build in that virtual type world?
I much prefer face-to-face interactions. I think we're doing some good stuff with the virtual role plays.
No, I agree. We're really fortunate, Memory Blue and a lot of other companies and education as a whole, to be able to have and access the resources that we do to be able to successfully carry on and engage in this way. And I personally love the virtual aspect of it. We were talking just before this about how you can now recruit in 3 different states in a span of 2 different days and just get that exposure, which is to a time like this. And I would say that it's a silver lining. One final question about your professional life, and then we have a couple fun questions to ask you. What would you say is the most rewarding aspect of being an educator of sales? What is most rewarding to you right now in your career?
So I had a student, it's been a couple years ago, in my sales class who was a marketing major and wasn't thinking about sales. And she wasn't very vocal in the class. She didn't speak up in the class. She did pretty good at role plays, but wasn't very vocal in the class, got hired into a sales role. And a year later, I saw her, she won a national award, and I saw her address an audience of about 300 people in a large auditorium from a dais and a microphone up in front of everybody. And so to me, seeing that transition is extremely rewarding. And to be part of that transition, because what I saw was tremendous growth from the first time we met to then what I saw where she had transitioned to the job and then the company had taken her through a year or so. And now she was the number one person in that company and addressing a large live audience. So that was fascinating. But really what motivates me is just when I can work with students to help them achieve the goals that they really want to achieve from a job perspective. We talked about purpose earlier. That's where I feel my purpose, by helping enable them to achieve the goals. And sometimes it's help them define the goals that they're trying to achieve. That's part of the process too. But then watching that achievement take place.
That's amazing. As a recruiter for Memory Blue, I've hired so many SDRs in my time and I've seen them grow and progress in their careers, whether they end up in sales long-term or decide to pursue a different career path. It all is so transferable. And your student that you were just talking about, she'll carry that skill in later stages of her life as well and apply it elsewhere. I think that's the biggest takeaway that I've had in my experience working in this industry is just, it doesn't pigeonhole you into something specific. You can go on to be an educator. You can go on to be a manager and be a recruiter once you have that foundation and you have that confidence built. So thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, so we talked about my Navy background. And I'll tell you, I mean, being a college professor was new to me, but I was a flight instructor for about 8 years of my 20 years in the Navy. And when you're sitting in an airplane with someone trying to teach them something, oftentimes they're afraid and you have to develop the skills and build the confidence and get them through that fear so they can perform. It's no different with our sales students and with our college students. Many are afraid. They don't know what lies after graduation. So it's really just helping them through that fear. And it's no different from what I did in the Navy. I mean, it's the same process. And the goal is to get them through that so they can do, whether it's a job or the task that they've set out to do, and be successful in it.
It's the fear of the unknown. You don't know what a career in this industry looks like. You have this idea of what it might be, but until you have that information in front of you, it's hard to commit with confidence. And that's basically what we're all doing, working in this industry, educating about it, shedding light to aspects of a career in this space that aren't normally brought to light in most cases. So I think that you've honestly dropped so much knowledge on this podcast episode, Richard. We appreciate it so much. We want to switch gears and talk about a little bit more of a fun stuff. We have a couple of fun questions to ask. This first one, we actually ask all of our candidates as they interview with us. So I'm curious about where you're going to land here. Do you love to win or hate to lose more, and why?
Oh, that's a tough one. I probably hate to lose more because that just recognized to me, well, they both are a reflection on how well you prepared and how well you perform. But there's just more impact for me to lose. I feel that failure and loss, I internalize a lot of that. And if I do fail or lose at something, it's because maybe I wasn't prepared enough, or maybe I didn't put the time in it that it required. Because frankly, I mean, losing hits you directly. Whereas winning, I mean, sometimes you win and you don't really even expect to. So that happens. I mean, sometimes even in sales, people will call you with a big order and you didn't even know who they were. And it's a big win. I mean, that happens. But when you go after something and fail at it, that hits a lot closer. So I think for me, losing would be my choice out of those two, because that reflects on me and my preparation. Winning might reflect on something else.
That's a good point. That's a very interesting way to look at it. Okay, this is another fun one for you, Richard. If you could have one billboard anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would it say?
Oh, that's tough. Now, you guys know in my Navy career, it took me to 34 countries where I got to spend at least one night. So I think at this point in my life, I would have a billboard in Haleiwa, Hawaii, on the north, on the coast, and it would say, "Surf here with me today."
Awesome. That's great. So professor, pilot, surfer, the list goes on and on. Let's wrap up with, what are you world class at? What do you think is like your superpower?
Libby might know, but I have a hobby farm, right? Here in Virginia. And I have a few cows. It's just something I do that keeps me. A lot of people like to have, at the end of the day, they have a nice fish tank and they like to stare at their fish, and that's how they manage their stress. So from my perspective, I like to have a few acres and I have a few cows walking around. So right now it's wintertime in Virginia. And when the snow's on the ground, you have to feed them. I have 1,000-pound big rolls of hay that I feed my cows. And I do that with a forklift skid loader thing. And I start at the top of the hill and I lift up a 1,000-pound bale. I lower it and flip it up in the air just perfectly. So when it hits the ground, it unrolls all the way down the hill. So right now, at this point in time in my life, my superpower is to be able to feed 20 cows a 1,000-pound roll of hay without ever getting out of my piece of equipment.
That is a talent. <That's great. laughs> Richard, you are an incredible storyteller. We are really lucky that we got to spend some time with you today. And for everyone listening, I think that you've illuminated a lot of things to consider when they're considering their first career, whether it's in sales or it isn't. So we really appreciate you spending some time with us today. Thank you so much.
It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
For almost two decades, Memory Blue has helped high-tech firms tackle their sales development challenges and carve out bigger market share in their space. Building and executing a carefully designed, multi-touch cadence that generates a flow of sales-qualified leads is the hallmark of our business. Our flexible solutions and talented professionals produce real results that clients can bank on. The end goal of our outreach is scheduling a qualified meeting so you can provide a comprehensive discovery call and bring the sale to a close. This carefully crafted process produces new business opportunities that have converted into over $1 million in closed deals. Hundreds of high-tech companies have trusted Memory Blue to help them grow, penetrate new markets, and test the viability of a new product. If you're interested in learning more about Memory Blue's full sales development services, head to memoryblue.com/sales.
Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.